You're listening to Seattle Puck Talk on Blog Talk Radio. It's your host, Neil Roberts, here, and I'm joined by Doug Taylor. Doug is joining us to help us introduce us to the sport of hockey. It's something I need to learn about. It's something we all need to learn about, and that's something this show is hopefully going to teach us. It's pretty apparent at this point in time that the NHL is going to be coming to Seattle as soon as an arena plan is announced and made concrete. This show will be a chance for us to have a guest on who know the sport, help break down positions, what they do, different styles of offensive attack, different styles of defensive positioning, and how that can change the way a game works. And we're going to start off real basic in this first episode with Doug. We're going to go over the rules and positions and kind of what their general job description is. Doug, how the heck are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, Neil. Thank you for having me on this maiden voyage of the Puck Talk.
It's exciting, and that name may change it, but at the current moment, this is what we're going with.
Yeah, so that's fine. That was in no way the name. No,
yeah.
It's fine. It's basic. We're doing basic stuff here, so that's fine.
It's exactly what it is. So I think just to give our listeners a little different taste of what's going on, I currently am drinking my poison of choice, if you would prefer it, is the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. It's a little bit hoppy, but it's not nearly as hoppy as the IPAs I usually drink, so it's a little different taste for me, and it's something I'm enjoying thoroughly. Doug, are you drinking anything tonight?
I've chosen an IPA from it's Vancouver. It's from Vancouver Island, but it has a lot of Cascade hops. It's the Shipwreck IPA from Lighthouse Brewing, which I believe is in the town of Saanich on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. So, indeed, here's to hops. Delicious Cascade hops.
Hops in general are the best. So I like hops. They give it a little more beer, a little more flavor, and a little more body, and that's something that I appreciate when I'm drinking it.
Indeed. Here, here.
So, moving on to talking hockey, because that's what this is about. It's going to be interesting to see what we're doing here, what's going on with the sport itself. For me, as I was talking to Doug before the show, I've been to maybe 10, 20 Everett Silvertip games in my life, and that's about it. I was at their opening night in 2004 at the Everett Event Center before it became Comcast Arena. And I enjoy watching the sport. I enjoy going to the games, but I don't know it well enough to break it down or discuss what's happening on the rink, and that's why Doug's here to help us slowly learn more about the sport. Doug, let's get a little bit into your background about hockey before moving on to the actual sport itself.
Certainly. Well, I'm an unlikely hockey fan in that I was born and raised in Tacoma, and we had a junior team, the Rockets, for a bit, who are now in Kelowna. They're actually playing in the Junior Hockey's Canadian Championship called the Memorial Cup right now. I never made it to those games, but I saw a couple on TV, and then semi-pro, kind of double-A level hockey came in to Tacoma. They're called the Sabercats. They played for a few years in the late 90s and early 2000s at the beautiful, intimate Tacoma Dome. Cavernous, but a good experience, a fun introduction to the game. And then from there, actually, I would have to point to NHL 94, the Sega Genesis game, as the game that really taught me hockey, which is kind of a strange thing, although it's actually one of the biggest sports video games ever. Just that, yeah, I learned from a video game. That's how I know the game. So since then, followed hockey. I'm a Vancouver Canucks fan at present, but I'm ready to turn on them at a moment's notice when Seattle finally gets a team. So yes, it'll be good to talk these things through, talk about the game. This Selfless season, we only have about 13 games left, even possible, because both series are in Game 5 of the Conference Final, which is where we are right now. And then the Stanley Cup Finals will begin right after that, and that's only a best of 7. So otherwise, it'll be a lot of off-season stuff until action starts back up in early October. So,
which, if you think about it, is a perfect chance to really break the game down to its basic level for newbies to understand.
Sure.
So let's start talking about it. And at the very basic thing, one of the things that's always caught me a little off guard about hockey is some of the rules and how they're enforced. I know that's how a lot of people been introduced to new sports will often feel. A lot of people who Europeans who are introduced to American football wonder how some of the hits aren't flags, but some of the others are, and even Americans who are into American football get confused with that. But for me, going back to hockey, one of the bigger, more confusing things is high sticking. Where's the range on that, as well as how does that get called sometimes and not others when it looks clearly there is intent behind it?
Well, it's it has a lot to do with the type of game that the officials are refereeing. Again, referees are people, and some will be kind of very straight on the line. The moment it's crossed, they'll put the hand up and call a penalty. Other times, they'll maybe let things go a little bit, let teams be very physical. In regards to high sticking, though, it is generally in touching the face or very much above the, you know, shoulder area with the stick. You're not allowed to make contact with anybody with your stick, shoulder and above. But it's generally usually seen in the face. There have been a few of them in the playoffs, high sticking calls where stick, you know, unfortunately, you know, unintentionally gets up, or a player goes down, and you know, stick to face, and to the box they go.
Yeah, it's. I guess that's actually a nice transition to what I wanted to talk about, but I'm going to tie sticking a little bit more here. I've seen some obvious high stickings that don't get called in some of the NHL games I've watched, and in a lot of WHL games I've watched as well. I obviously understand the WHL officials aren't as highly trained as the NHL ones, but it's still something you think they would be pretty tight to call on, especially with the more research we've done on head trauma, especially recently in the last few years. And I just wonder, I guess we're going to go a little off the rails here, but that's okay.
I hope we do that a lot.
How do you think this CTE stuff is going to impact hockey going forward, and how the league is going to have to enforce it from the NHL to its minor league levels?
Yeah, it's certainly it's an ongoing discussion. It was in the news. Maybe this is why you brought it up last week, because I believe the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, said that there was no scientific link between the effects of hard hitting in hockey and CTE, which is what they're seeing in a lot of football players as well. They've been kind of on parallel tracks, this discussion. Of course, in the NHL, not quite as much traction in the States as there is in Canada, but there have been a few of the enforcers of hockey, you know, the kind of goons who are the big fighters. You know, they'd put them on the ice, start something, then they'd punch each other for a few minutes, then go to the box or the locker room. I've been finding in the last few years, we've actually had a couple of, you know, tragic situations where they've ended up taking their lives because they've been in such pain, just like the football players were. And so that'll have to be a more open and honest debate. And at the same time, hockey is a very fast and violent game, and there's only so much you can do. Like, it's quicker than football.
Yeah, it's
because you're on skates, you're moving, and if you line somebody up and you really nail them, you can hit somebody really hard, do a lot of damage. High sticking is not going to really affect CTE. It's a lot more somebody getting shoulder or elbow to the head, or a head driven into the boards, or something to that effect, and the repeated action of that happening again and again and again. So that's, it's been something really in the last couple of years we've really kind of seen fighting in the NHL decline a significant amount. It's coming out of the game, to Don Cherry's dismay. I don't know if you know who Don Cherry is.
No, but
okay. Don Cherry is a Canadian hockey. He was a hockey player, then a coach. He coached the Boston Bruins to a Stanley Cup final at one time. And for a very long time, he's been on TV as hockey's John Madden in Canada.
That's who I was thinking of when you said that, because
yes,
it just made that mental image of Madden complaining about hitting getting taken out of the game.
Uh-huh. And so Don is, he also is known for wearing very flamboyant suits. Bright, strangely colored. He's an interesting fellow, but was for a long time seen as the kind of the conscience of the fan on Hockey Night in Canada, or on NHL broadcasts here in Canada. And I think that's kind of dissipating a bit. Everybody still kind of loves him as an old grandpa of sorts, but I think there are real concerns, and people are working from the youth level on to try and take dangerous hits out of the game. There's always going to be hitting. There needs to be hitting. But that's something that they're going to try and work on to prevent head trauma.
It's the unnecessary stuff, the late hits. Same thing in football, or even in what's the other sport I'm thinking of? Basketball too. You'll get that where they'll come in with a hard elbow to the back of the head.
I think that happened last night.
Yeah.
Al Horford to Dellavedova. and they got him thrown out of a game. So
right. So it's something the leagues are all going to have to crack down on. You'll see that in baseball a little bit too, with people going at it and brawls towards with punches towards the head. But that's going really off the topic. Before we went on this CTE discussion, you brought up going into the penalty box. And one of the questions I've always had, and I'm guessing there's more people out there with this question than is, what pushes the penalty from just a, you know, another face-off, there's the word I was looking for, to a time in the box for a player? And how is
okay,
that
well,
time in the box determined?
Sorry, say that again. Just guys kind of stepped on you there.
Sorry about that. So how is the, you know, what pushes it into penalty time, putting a player into the penalty box, and how does an official determine how long they're in the penalty box?
Well, it is determined by the penalty. So most of the penalties that gets people sent to the box, you're there for 2 minutes. Or if the opposing team, which then has one more person, which is called a power play, if they are able to score in the midst of that 2 minutes, then the penalty is over because the penalty has been served because a goal was scored. So most of the penalties, like roughing, is probably the most prevalent penalty in hockey. That's a 2 minute penalty. What happens either with high sticking or a couple of other penalties is that if you draw blood, the ref will look once there's a high stick for blood. If he sees blood, then it becomes a double minor. It's a 4 minute penalty. And so that will get people sent to the box for that. Fighting is kind of one of the few majors out there. That's a 5 minute penalty. I guess any penalty could be described to be major, but that's all at the discretion of the officials. And then once you get really kind of out of control, there's a 10-minute misconduct penalty for just being a general jerk on the ice. And if you go too far, or if you really take a cheap shot at someone and it's seen, you get what's called a game misconduct. You get ejected from the game.
Okay, so that actually clarifies a lot for me. Thank you.
No problem.
The next thing I have is, what would you consider to be the most important rule outside of penalties for new fans to the game to understand moving forward?
Probably icing, I would say, because it's the one that stops play the most without there being a lot of visual cues as to why. If somebody has seen hockey their whole life, then they know. You're not allowed to throw the puck in from behind the center red line past the goal line on the side. You're not just allowed to throw it in from far away to get the puck away from you. If you're on defense, if you're under a lot of pressure, your goalie's under a lot of pressure, if you just get the puck and you throw it down the length of the ice, then it used to be that the player had to go down and touch it in order for icing to be awarded. In the last couple of years, as part of the ways to prevent head injuries, they've turned to what's called a hybrid icing. That is, it's a race between players of each team's to the face-off circles. And whoever gets there first, if it's the team that didn't throw the puck in, then icing is called and it comes back, and the teams are not allowed to change players. So if you're tired, you still have to stay on the ice. And then worn down players generally make mistakes. So icing is the main one because it stops the action of play, and there's, you know, the ref doesn't get on the microphone that he has to explain what's happened. It just goes on.
So it just kind of happens, and fans are left to wonder what the heck's going on unless the PA announcer's on top of it then, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, ideally you get to a point where the PA announcer doesn't have to announce it, as everybody sees it and goes, oh, well, that's icing. We all know what that is.
That's true, and that's something that Seattle's going to have to work on once they get a team in that new building.
It'll be interesting to see how that works. If all of this occurs, and I hope that it does, and it seems like it will, whether it be in Soto or Tukwila or however this ends up working out, we have a lot of folks in the Pacific Northwest, even though I no longer live there. I'm from there. I still end up saying we a lot of the time. We have a lot of folks from all around the country. And so there are folks who maybe stay at home and follow their teams and understand the game, grew up with the game. Who then, when they come to the arena for Seattle games, will hopefully be savvy. But yeah, there will definitely be some work to do for whatever franchise comes in to kind of build from the ground up. But hopefully that will happen quickly. Seattle will embrace it, and then people will become obsessive about the rules and all sorts of other things as it goes. So
you're listening to Puck Talk on Blog Talk Radio. Stay tuned. After the break, we're going to be talking about positions, breaking down their general job descriptions on the offensive and defensive side of the puck. Stay tuned.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take.
Welcome back to Puck Talk here on Blog Talk Radio. Your host, Neil Roberts, along with Doug Taylor, talking about hockey. Breaking, we spent the last 15 minutes basically talking beer, CTE in hockey, and some of the basic hockey rules, icings, high sticking, and penalty boxes. Now we're going to move on to something that's a little more interesting from my perspective, and I'm sure Doug's going to enjoy talking about this a little more, and that's what each position does. Left wing, right wing, center, right defender, left defender, and goalie, and how that can impact the outcome of a game. Doug, you still there?
I'm here. Sorry. Yes. Let's do this.
Okay. So looking at the layout of the hockey rink and how they're positioned, you have the left wingers and the, it seems like the offensive positions are the left wingers, center, and right wingers. Is that correct?
Those would be the three forwards, yes.
Okay, so what does the left winger typically do?
Well, the three players kind of work as a unit. The center is obviously usually in the center. Centers end up being primarily guys who take faceoffs, try and get them to wings. But the forwards are obviously, you know, the bulk of the scoring players. They're trying to take the puck forward. Whether it be through just sheer skating and just moving, or whether it be a combination of that and passing, usually how that works, to get toward the net, to get a good look at goal, to shoot the puck into the net, and to score a goal.
So basically their jobs are to open up positions on the rink and make as many scoring opportunities as they can and take advantage.
That is exactly the point. And then as well, also, you know, they have to, you know, as hockey players like basketball and so on, they all play defense as well. Although I guess in soccer, the forwards they're around, but they're not playing quite as much defense. Forwards have to come back and play as well. If a defenseman gets in a rush and he comes up and tries to play the puck and go toward the net, you know, he's certainly, you know, able to do that, and many defenders have scored a lot of goals throughout the history of the NHL and of hockey in doing that. But if they do that, it's something called a pinch or pinching, then obviously a forward for the other team can scoot by them, and then if he loses the puck and they shoot it down the ice, oh, there's nobody there, and he's got a breakaway on the goalie. So
basically everybody plays crucial roles on the defensive end side of the rink. Now, where does that responsibility of coordinating the defensive effort and the defensive unit fall? Is that on the goalie? Is he that kind of on-the-field general like the quarterback or the center in basketball?
He is not quite that. He does a little of that in that he can kind of sometimes, especially if there's a face-off right near him, he can kind of adjust his players a bit to say where he wants them. But by and large, you are defined by your role to a degree. If you're a defenseman, you have it in the name. You're a defense man. So you play defense, and you make sure that you stay back. If you're kind of looking at this in just a shape of sorts, you'd have your three forwards above, left wing, right wing, and center, or left wing, center, and right wing, going left to right, and then you'd have your two defensemen. And so the defensemen are the last line of defense between the other team and your goalie. So that's kind of how that operates. It's not quite like a goalie. I'd say a goalie is a little bit like a catcher in that regard. So he's still maybe adjusting, but not usually on the fly. In the NHL, and even in other levels of hockey, you see this in the Western Hockey League too. Guys kind of know what they're to do. They work on that in practice, and so when they're out there on the ice, they pretty much have a general idea of where they need to be and what they need to be doing.
So would you say that the hockey is a much more independently focused team sport than, say, basketball or football, where the quarterback or the center on the offensive side are responsible for aligning positions, or the nose tackle and the middle linebacker?
Yes, everybody kind of has to pull their weight. And those three forwards especially, they kind of work in two groups that are working together, but they're nevertheless slightly distinct, in that you have the set of three, which is called a line. Usually teams have four lines of three forwards, and then they have three sets of two defensemen for 18, and then a goalie makes it 19 for the roster. And then usually there's a backup goalie as well. So you usually have 20 players who are active on any given night in the NHL. So those lines work together. If those lines are not working together, that is, they're not scoring goals, they're not getting good offensive opportunities, then the coach is able to adjust. He can say, well, you're on this line now, and to rotate them out. In fact, John Cooper, who's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who the Lightning are interesting to watch from a Northwest angle in and of themselves, because Tyler Johnson, who is one of their young kind of stars now, is from Spokane. He's a Washington State native, and he plays for the Lightning, and they're in the playoffs right now. He's done this interesting thing where he has seven defensemen, so he's constantly rotating the defensemen, and he only has 11 forwards. So he has one line that's set because they work really well, and then the other forwards are just kind of rotating in and out. So they're all kind of on the same lines, having to do the things. But in the end, yeah, the three forwards are working both in front of the net and behind the net to get the puck to the net to score goals, and the defensemen will wind up behind them and take big slap shots and do things as well. So
the forwards are generally designed to be the more mobile and more quick-moving. They'll typically be the faster-moving people on the rink, with the goal of getting taking the pressure off of their goalie, kind of like you'll see the midfielder in soccer. Move
yeah,
the ball to get
that
away,
would be a good,
kick it out for offense.
Oh, sorry, didn't mean to step on you there.
You're fine.
Yes, the forwards, if you're watching a hockey game and a team is on offense and they have the puck in the other team's zone, which is the zone is the blue line. The lines are important in hockey. You need to know your lines. The blue line to the goal line and in behind the net as well. So the forward, it's almost like the red zone, but for hockey. So you have that area, and the forwards are constantly moving around, moving the puck. The defenseman will shift sides from time to time just to give different looks to confuse the defense, just try to keep things moving. But by and large, they are more stable in the movement of the game.
Okay, so that's really helpful and really informative. Thanks for that, Doug. This is something you were hinting at a little earlier. You were really eager to get onto, and that's talking about the actual NHL playoff here. And the Stanley Cup as we're moving along. So last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning ended up winning. They have a 3-2 series lead that Ducks and the Blackhawks play today. Where do you see this thing going?
Well, the thing about these playoffs, and I mean, the hockey playoffs are exciting to watch. Like, even people who are sort of very casual fans of hockey will will tune in for the playoffs, especially because it is kind of this different game, so to speak, because the entire regular season, you know, 82 games you play. And if you're tied after three periods, hockey game, three periods of 20 minutes, if you're tied, then you play a 5-minute overtime period with four players from each team on the ice, not counting the goalie. And then if that doesn't, you know, somebody doesn't score, then they go to a shootout, kind of like penalty kicks in soccer. They take the puck from the center dot and go forward toward the net and try to score, and then the winner of that shootout wins the game. In the playoffs, they just keep playing 20-minute periods until there's a goal, which we've seen even in the conference finals. Anaheim and Chicago in the Western Conference final had two games in a row where they went multiple overtimes. They went very deep. One of them was three overtimes, the last game in Anaheim. So it just kept going and going and going. You got to score a goal to win the game. So it's just exciting from that regard. And in these playoffs especially, usually people talk about momentum and all those sorts of things. And there's just really been none of that. Like, it seems like we know what teams are doing and where they're going to go. And then it turns the next night. Like, Tampa Bay had been blown out on their home ice. And home ice advantage is a big thing in hockey, in that, you know, your crowd is loud. And as well, because of the placement on the boards, like, you'll notice this if you ever see a hockey game, the one team's on one side, they're both on the same side of the rink, but the home team is closest to its offensive side for two of the three periods. So they're able to make line changes and things a little quicker. They have a built-in advantage based on how the rink is structured. And they just got leveled by the Rangers. And then they go to Madison Square Garden last night, which is a tough place to play. The Rangers are very good there. And Ben Bishop, who took a puck in warmups to the future Bishops, the Nether Regions, shuts out the Rangers. They kind of out-Rangered the Rangers. I mentioned that on the blog that we have. They played tough, tenacious defense, blocked a lot of shots, and were able to really, do a number on the Rangers, and now they have a chance to close it out on their home ice tomorrow night.
All right, so where you got the Blackhawks and Ducks are tied 2-2, they play tonight. Tampa Bay has that 3-2 series lead. What's your Stanley Cup prediction right here, right now?
Oh, you got to put me on the spot. I guess do. That's how this works. I like Tampa to finish off the Rangers, and against my better judgment, I'm going to pick Chicago because they have so much experience. They're the Blackhawks, their main offensive players, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, they've been on two cup-winning teams in the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years. So they know what to do in tough situations, and it's just going to come down to it. It would not shock me at all if Anaheim won that series, not remotely. It seems like these four teams are just very even. If you're in the NHL offices, you absolutely want a Chicago-New York Stanley Cup final. And it is a final. It's a singular. They're not finals unless you're talking about both the conferences. I know it's strange, but that's how it works. And so the Stanley Cup final, it could be any of these four teams. I'm going to pick Chicago and Tampa Bay in that series. And they'll be a good matchup. And I would go Tampa Bay in 7 in that matchup. So I'm picking Chicago's experience for the Western Conference final and then disregarding it for the Stanley Cup final.
That's how it works in the playoffs sometimes, Doug.
Well, because then everything could be thrown in the air with injuries and things. If a goalie gets injured or one of your main centers or big stars gets hurt, it can alter the entire complexion of a game and series. And so there's just so much unknown, and it seems like even more unknown because it has been very unpredictable and exciting to watch. And I would expect game 5 of the Ducks and Blackhawks tonight at the Pond in Anaheim. I think it's called Honda Center now. It used to be the Arrowhead Pond because they were the Ducks. That should be another fascinating game tonight. And they were both best of threes coming into last night. And so now Tampa's got a chance to close it out. Whoever wins tonight will have a chance to close it out. If Chicago wins tonight, I would expect them to win game 6 and to finish the series. But then with the way these playoffs have been, they may lose and then they'd go back to game seven. But I like whoever wins tonight in the West to be the conference champion. And then you get to see another hockey, like many sports, is a very superstitious game. You have for each conference, you have a trophy that the team wins, but they will not hoist that trophy. They won't do it.
Why not?
Because that's not the trophy you want to hoist. You want to hoist Lord Stanley's cup. So you don't hoist that one. So it's even kind of in Canada. I noticed, I live in Canada. There is a debate, like, is this okay? It's an interesting sort of thing. So you'll see them take a picture with a trophy. They may put their hands on the trophy. Some won't even do that. But they will not put it up in the air and celebrate. The only trophy that they will hoist is Lord Stanley's Cup, which is a wonderful thing. If you've never seen it, if you've never seen hockey at all, and you're even like, I'm not that interested. If a Stanley Cup final game gets to a point where the team can win the cup that night, watch that game, keep tabs on the game, because that presentation is unlike anything in sports. Gives me chills every year because it's this giant 35-pound silver cup, and they bring it out onto the ice, and you know, the crowd's either cheering wildly or utterly subdued and sad, and the winning team gets to take the cup, hoist it over their heads, and skate around the ice like a bunch of very happy idiots. And rightfully so. They will have earned one of the great prizes in sports. But it's a fascinating thing to see, the Stanley Cup. Best trophy in sports.
And I can't think of any better way to end this podcast and point out that anyone hosting that cup will be hosting it with Seattle's name on it.
This is true. Yeah, so look forward to next week when we have an interview with Seattle Metropolitan's great Frank Foylston.
You've been listening to the Seattle Puck Talk, the maiden voyage, the first broadcast ever on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
See ya.